This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back. Welcome back. Carol, are you there?
I am.
I'm here with my co-host, Carol Peterson, and this is getting close to a year wrap-up. We're the couple days before Christmas. So to begin, I want to wish absolutely everybody a happy holiday. And so, like I said, today is going to be a wrap-up. We're going to be going through different things we brought up throughout the year and things we learned, things we hoped you learned, and focus in on them and just touch on them so that it comes to mind and it becomes part of your ability to utilize nutrients and health in a different way. I really wanted to finish what I started last week. And last week I started out the program by saying that Americans on average, that's average, some more, some less, but average, gain about 8 pounds during the winter. Now that's pretty significant. That's a lot of weight. And with that, I said, not my listeners, not my kids. No way.
So we're supposed to hibernate.
Well, neither do we want to hibernate at this point either. We hibernated for 2 years. Now it's time to get out.
Yes.
And smell the chill in the air and have it tickle our nose. So we discussed low carb eating, and we discussed a few things that we can do during this holiday and after. And we're not talking about a diet, we're talking about a lifestyle change that could make a big difference in your life. And we got through part of them, but there was so much to talk about that what we did was we ended up not completing it. So let me talk about a couple of things. One is if we can't stick to healthy eating, then what do we do? Number one, we decide. The first step is the decision to take action. The second step is realize our bodies aren't that smart in some ways, in that what happens is we can train our bodies to desire certain things that aren't healthy for us. Although
some foods are manufactured that way. Many of the processed foods. Well, include with them an automatic desire to have more.
Yes, an extreme example, although not that extreme, is alcohol. When you're drinking lots of alcohol, you desire alcohol, but that's not what your body needs. Your body needs proteins to settle things down. Your body needs some liver detox, and then maybe, if we're really lucky, with look, you can make it through that period of time. And so understand our body's not that smart. So if our body's craving a candy bar, it's craving energy, and our blood sugar dropped. So if someone is craving alcohol, you don't give them more alcohol to make them feel better. Yeah, they'll immediately feel better.
That's supposed to be the hangover cure.
Well, yeah, the hair of the dog that bit you.
Right.
But what we really need is we need to calm our body down, listen to our body on a different level. I know that it was very interesting because as when I was midwifing full time, the people that would come to me were very health conscious, extremely health conscious. And they would come into the office almost crying, saying, "All I can think of is that I want is a Coca-Cola. All I want is a Coca-Cola." And what was happening is, one, they needed three things, and they needed more protein. And very often, when we gave them more protein, that craving for Coca-Cola just dissipated. The other is they needed some more magnesium. And sometimes, just with magnesium, it would dissipate. But they also needed enzymes because Coca-Cola is very acidic and it helps digest, just like we say, take apple cider vinegar. It helps digest. And very often in pregnancy, your digestion is off. So our body isn't that smart to understand what we need. It understands a desire, but it doesn't direct us to the correct needs. So it's our job to sort through some of that. And then
But wait, Corinne, before you go on to the next point, let's give out the phone number because we do
Oh.
want people to phone in. So it's 212-209-2877. Please call us. We'd like to find out from you about your holiday eating and if you face the average 8 pound weight gain, how did you face it and what did you do, and how did you cope with all the social interactions during the holidays that also always seem to involve food? It must raise our dopamine or something. Just makes us feel good, people and food and drink, etc.
I think it's serotonin. The dopamine is raised more when we're outside, when we're ice skating, when we're active. That would be more of a dopamine rise. But serotonin is a calm, sedative, elevated insulin, wanting more sugar. It raises. That would be more of the pathway that it would go on. And there's a very interesting way to reduce our body cravings just naturally. One, and I repeat this just about every week, it's like a broken record. No snacking, zero, none. If you want to eat, eat. But you cannot snack between meals at all. That was created. This desire for snacking was created by the food industry to sell more food. You know, ice cream was invented in Italy, and they brought it to all these other countries that were eating it constantly. And then they realized that one of the lowest consumption of ice cream was in Italy, in all of Europe. And why? Because they only ate seasonal. So if it was the fall, they ate pumpkin ice cream. If it was the summer, they ate lemon ice cream and peach ice cream. And if you offered them a peach or a lemon in the middle of the winter, oh no, I don't want that. And they would never eat it between meals. They would only eat it as a dessert and very special desserts. So you didn't have people walking through the streets licking on ice cream all day long. And they literally taught the Italians to eat more ice cream. And now Italians have some weight problems, not as much as we do, but they do. And
Isn't
so.
that a wonderful complete food with fat, protein, and carbohydrates all combined?
Well, when you eat it the way they make it, yes. And good fats, eggs, whole eggs,
Yes.
cream,
Real cream, full
local
bread cream.
cream, and fruits and sugar, but not that much sugar. Their ice cream isn't as sweet as ours. But even still, they had to be taught to eat more. And that was industry teaching them. And then the next
You know,
way.
it's very strange when you look at a carton of ice cream. There's really those basic ingredients that you just mentioned. That's the foundation for ice cream. But if you look on the label, you're going to find all sorts of added ingredients of which you don't understand the names. And we add all these fillers to the ice cream as well.
And generally, no cream, maybe some powdered milk,
Yes, powdered milk, no fat milk.
no eggs, and three different forms of sugar, or four different forms of sugar.
And
And
thickening agents.
thickening agents, because you don't have the natural thickening of the whole foods. So then the next thing is get rid of sugar as much as possible, but particularly not as a snack. Worst thing you can do if you snack on sugar, it'll just make you so hungry for your next meal. And the next thing is plan your meal. Don't wait till your body tells you what it wants. Also, make sure you have good foods in the house. And those people who don't plan to fail or do well. And so planning is essential to what you want in
Right.
your life.
Even traveling a lot, I have a few basics in my fridge that I can always make something with. And one of my favorites is doing an omelet, and I put onions and feta cheese in it, and the feta cheese keeps very well when it's submerged in its salty brine. And I do this for the omelet, and then I put salsa on top of it. And so with that and some carrots and apples, I always have a meal in my fridge.
Sounds delicious. You're making me hungry. And you know, feta cheese is not cow's milk. If it's imported, it's not cow's milk. It's a mix of goat and sheep's milk. So
Right,
it's
and
not.
it's full of enzymes and probiotics. It's actually an excellent, excellent choice.
So we've got a list, a way to get started. We can go on, but Carol, why don't we go to you and then we'll come back to me. You pass it back to me. Remember, the number to call is 212-209-2877. And you can talk about anything. You can talk about how you troubleshoot your health. You can talk about what it feels like this holiday season. Holiday seasons are seasons, are times, very commonly times of longing. And there's different kinds of longing. Longing for what you used to have as a child, longing for people who have passed, and or longing for something you never really had, but which is the ideal, or what they put forward as the ideal. It's a very interesting time. You know, Carol, my mother died 2 weeks ago. My 100-year-old mother.
Right, we interviewed her not that long ago.
And you saw how bright and smart she
Yes,
was.
and optimistic
Oh my God.
and had things to look forward to. She was amazing.
Yeah. And she died, and it was a heartache for all of us in our family. So I'm going through longing right now in this holiday season.
Well, I'd like to bring up one of my personal heroes has died. And this would be Dr. Ray Peet. And throughout this evolution of using bioidentical hormones, Ray Peet was one of the pioneers of the pioneers. Dr. John Lee is renowned for writing a book and spreading the message about using progesterone, but he based everything he knew on Ray Peet's original work as he worked as a biochemist. And he continued in the field. He would write these newsletters every month. And as he got older, it became like every 2 months, but he still kept it up. And he covered all sorts of areas and pointed out where some of our faulty systems thinking with the bodies came up. And he'd point out studies that were done that were right on point and were very predictive for good health. I so look forward to his emails, his email newsletter. And in fact, every time I read it, it would give me a bit of a headache. You know, that kind of feeling you get when your brain is exposed to more information and sort of has to make room for it. You feel like your brain is stretching. Dr. Peet actually helped me out a couple times. There was a big story in the New York Times about, oh, progesterone's going to make cancer spread if you have a cancer. So I got the original paper and I asked Ray Peet for help because I couldn't see for myself what was wrong with this paper. And lickety split with a number of emails back and forth between him and me and the author who published this.
Oh, really?
Yes. So what his intention of the whole study was really faulty. He had no placebo to demonstrate an alternative thing. The whole idea of the paper was to pave the way for an anti-progesterone drug that we would pretty much put in our drinking water. With the idea that just in case you had cancer, it wouldn't spread. And it was clearly false when you dug into the study, and it was clearly meant to promote this new drug. It was just getting FDA authorization as an anti-progesterone. So it's the work behind the morning after pills, which if you rob your body of progesterone, you would immediately abort because you need progesterone to support a pregnancy. But progesterone is so much a life force and anti-cancer on its own merits.
Exactly.
He was
very anti-cancer. So it's exactly the opposite of what progesterone,
right?
Natural progesterone is all about.
So he cleared the mud on that particular issue, and I was able to use it and even speak out at a cancer conference where somebody said, in the New York Times, they had this study. When it doesn't seem right, you really should dig a little deeper because probably it's not right. Trust your gut and trust your sense of what you know is so important. So I am really going to miss Dr. Ray Peet. However, this is really interesting because as he got older, he got more and more people following him. There's numerous groups on the internet. If you look up Dr. Ray Peet, there's forums, there's places where they have interviews with him. He really got quite a following, and it amazed me because this was a whole younger generation of people who tapped into the work of Dr. Ray Peet. So he has left us quite a legacy. There's lots of interviews, lots of newsletters, several books. He was somebody to really be appreciative, that has helped the whole world really understand something about hormones and progesterone in particular.
Big loss.
I know.
Big loss.
I know, and there I just came across right after he died something I would love to challenge him on. So
it always happens.
Yeah, you made this statement, Dr. Pete, and you cited this reference, and this was in a rat, and it was only one organ, but you're sort of talking about this happens all over the body. I'm not sure that's true.
Yeah.
But I can't do it now.
Yeah, his specialty was progesterone. He was wonderful. So I'll go back to me. I've got a little list. I found this quiz that I thought was really interesting, and I'm going to give it to you, and you can yes or no. A yes is 2 and a no is 0. And we're going to add up the points, and we're going to find out how sensitive you are to carbs. This is a short list. There are longer ones, but this it works. The number to call is 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. And let's start. 1, after breakfast, do you get hungry before it's time for lunch? Is that a yes or a no?
And are you asking me to take this test?
You may. Do you have a difficult time stopping once you start to eat starches, snack food, or junk food, or even sweets?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Do you sometimes feel unsatisfied even though you've just finished a meal?
Yes.
Does the sight and smell or even the thought of food sometimes stimulate you to eat?
Maybe. You don't have a maybe category or sometimes.
No, maybe. It's a yes or no. Black or white.
I hate questionnaires that are so black and white. I need once in a while.
Do you sometimes eat even though you're not really hungry?
Rarely.
Are you sometimes unable to keep from snacking at night?
No.
No.
It's easy to do.
Yeah. After a large meal, do you feel very sluggish and almost drugged?
Depends on how large.
And
to me, it was tricky.
It depends on the foods.
Yeah.
I'm always, when I'm at work, I'm very careful on what I eat, so I don't get that feeling for the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And do you unexplainedly get tired and or hungry in the afternoon?
No.
Have you at times continued eating even though you felt uncomfortably full?
Rare occasion.
And have you been on a diet after diet only to lose weight and then regain it again?
Of course.
Okay. So, you count your yes answers and add them up, see how many you have, and then 0 to 2, you do not appear to be addicted to carbs. And then 3 to 4, you have a mild carb addiction, which at times you may be able to control, although not all the times, with some difficulty. And 5 to 7 yeses. Your score indicates you are moderately addicted to carbs, and at times you may be able to control your eating, but you may find that stress, PMS changes, tiredness, boredom, unexpressed anger or pressure may increase your carb cravings. I think that's many of us. And the last one is 8 to 10 you have scored in the severe carb addict range. You may be struggling to control your eating without realizing that your body has been fighting you, driving you to eat, and then storing the excess food. So that's kind of a bit revealing in terms of, because many of the people who come into my office go into a fog after they're through eating. Very many people. Many people have difficulty. I had a lawyer that came in to me, and she worked very hard, very high stress job, very, very hard all day. And when she got home, she'd try to stay out for a while. And then when she got home, she went straight to bed, because if she didn't go straight to bed, she'd open her refrigerator and just start eating until she went to bed. Now that's stress eating.
That's right. I was just reading again a little piece by Dr. Michael Platt.
Mm-hmm.
And what he was saying was quite interesting. There's a group on Facebook called the Estrogen Dominance Facebook group, and they've called this estrogen dominance, and they also called an effect that when you use progesterone and too little progesterone, they call it estrogen kickback. And what Dr. Platt sort of named it as an adrenaline and insulin resistance kind of kickback. And it all ties into the blood glucose and insulin resistance that we've talked about many, many times. And where adrenaline ties into insulin resistance is that adrenaline is responsible for keeping up your blood sugar, particularly to the brain. So it really depends on what you eat, how you eat, too many carbs causing you to swing into high glucose and then low glucose because insulin has become more prominent. And we don't routinely measure insulin like we measure glucose. And adrenaline is so ephemeral in our body tissues, we can't measure that either. But the symptoms that menopausal women might have, particularly those adding a little bit of progesterone and not enough, but some women have these symptoms anyway, where they have huge anxiety and heart palpitations, and they think they're having a heart attack and even run to the hospital. He says, well, progesterone is an adrenaline balancer, so that would help. More progesterone helps, but women become convinced they can't use it. It's toxic for them because of what they're experiencing. But the solution is more progesterone, but the solution also is to eat something, because that's why the adrenaline is pounding away. And he says that if you hit menopause in this insulin resistant state, that your tendency to have this kind of reaction is higher. So I've always pointed out to people that insulin and glucose are the oldest, most primitive hormones, and they're actually the strongest hormones in your body. So that all ties it up very neatly for me. It may not just be estrogen. It can be estrogen doing some of the same mechanisms there too. But adrenaline is a big force, and then the insulin resistant piece is huge. And the propensity insulin resistance stems from eating too many animals.
I just heard, I was reading before the show, Dr. Neil Bernard, the doctor who did the first heart transplants, and he was talking about having people reduce the carbs they're eating to lower their insulin is like putting a Band-Aid over a problem and saying it's fixed. Now, that's a pretty strange way of putting it, since isn't doing a heart transplant when you have heart problems a way of putting a Band-Aid over the problem rather than dealing with it? So what happens is there's a lot of false information out there with a lot of misunderstandings. So I want to go through this list quickly and just tell you what is happening and why very quickly. After a full breakfast and you get hungry before it's lunch, very often that's a breakfast of cereal, sugar pops, some kind of sweet cereal.
And orange juice.
Orange juice, pancakes with syrup on it. Mm-hmm. And what you've done is surged up your carbs, dropped them, and now you're hungry again. And it's not, and it's 12 o'clock and you know you ate well. So that's got to do with insulin surging. Then do you have difficult time stopping eating? Well, that's, again, carbs. Like, I know as a kid we used to eat a big thing of pasta and we were stuffed, but then the dessert would come out and everybody would eat the dessert even though we were full. And part of that is the fact that with just straight carbs like that, we don't feel satisfied. Our brain isn't feeling that quiescence, that calmness that allows you to feel satisfied. You've eaten too fast and you just don't have a sensation in your brain that you're satisfied, although your stomach is bloated. And then sometimes you feel unsatisfied. I think that was answered in the last question. Does the sight, smell, or even the thought of food stimulate you to eat? Well, that's very common, and I think that that's appropriate. You walk into a house where your mother's cooking or your grandmother's cooking, and you smell the foods, and a lot of things come to your mind. Memories of when she made this food before. It's a hot soup, and it's a cold day, and you think of the comfort you'll have from the hot soup. I don't see that as a problem. And do you sometimes eat even though you're not really hungry? That's a habit we've gotten into. And part of it is the food industry taught us to do that. Another part is, before they go to play soccer, they're given a snack. They take a break in soccer and they're given a sweet snack. And then on the way home, they're hungry, so they're given another snack. They're being taught to overeat from a very young age. And then when you get older, if you're feeling lightheaded between meals, your doctor says, eat 6 meals a day to calm all this down. So we're being taught this. And then after a large meal, do you feel sluggish, almost drugged? Again, that is carbs, overeating, being bloated, and you feel almost drugged. Do you unexpectedly get tired and hungry in the afternoon? That can be multiple things. It also can be overeating carbs, but it doesn't only have to be. And do you have some times when you continue eating even though you felt uncomfortably full? Yes, I see people do that all the time in restaurants. They give these giant portions. They're supposed to be portion sizes for the individual, but they are not. They are not at all. And then have you been on diet after diet to lose weight and then regain it again? My goodness. And that is because you've been on a diet. You don't want to be on a diet. You want to be on a lifestyle food program that you can incorporate into your life, and it makes your life better. Why? Because you feel so much better. A diet is something that's limited. And then I had a woman, a very obese woman, who came into me, and she was losing weight so well. And she looked at me and she said, "Corinne, when can I start to eat normal again?" And I said, "Normal for whom? Normal for Muhammad Ali training for a fight? Normal for the model sitting in Vogue? Normal for the woman with the big sweater going into the grocery store, getting cereals? What normal would you like? Let's choose it." So it really is true. You are what you eat, and you can create a way to feel very, very satisfied. And it begins with not snacking, not snacking at night, not snacking between meals, eating a meal or skipping a meal. It doesn't matter. And eating when our bodies are hungry. We can look at the clock. "Oh my goodness, I skipped lunch. But I'm not hungry." Okay, no problem. Then we'll continue our day. You know, it's not so horrible to skip a meal. It's not.
I wonder who invented 3 meals a day. I've never come across that. What?
That one, honestly, I do not know.
I don't know either, which is an invention.
Oh, yes, it has to be. Because when we're hunter-gathering and we're out chasing a deer, we don't say, "Oh, my gosh, it's 12 o'clock.
It's lunchtime."
It's lunchtime. No, we just keep going until we have our meal for the village. For ourselves and the village.
Mm-hmm.
So, Carol.
Okay, so I'll jump over to the thing I learned about NO. I started reading, we talked about nitric oxide, and we had Beth Shirley on our program not that long ago, and we had quite a discussion on this. Again, another ephemeral little molecule that appears and disappears pretty quickly in our body, but it has the ability to relax our epithelium, and it's helpful for blood pressure or any kind of reduced circulation any place. So you can imagine that everything's affected. So I was seeing that people were taping their mouth closed on the biohacker sites, just putting tape over their mouth while they went to bed. So it's really not good to be doing breathing through your mouth anyway, because your saliva and your mouth all get dried out. That's not healthy for your tissues. But there's another piece of that is your body, if you're breathing through your nose, your body will make NO, nitric oxide, and you'll have the beneficial benefits such as reduced blood pressure and increased perfusion all over your body when you breathe through your nose and not through your mouth. So you'll find this taping your mouth pretty popular. I tried it myself. It's not too bad. I kind of like it.
Well, it's interesting because we know, and this is how I learned it. I had a patient who had this really uncontrolled hypertension, and nothing really fit his lifestyle. Nothing fit into him having this level of hypertension. And come to find out, he was a heavy, heavy snorer. So he was mouth breathing continuously all night long. And when He got an apparatus and he began to breathe through his nose. His blood pressure came down. So that could be very well just directly related to the NO that his body was again able to make. Carol?
Okay, then I just ran into, you know, post-COVID, there's been people complaining of loss of taste and smell.
Mm-hmm, a lot. And
yeah, low zinc has something to do with that. One practitioner told me that she had very good luck with alpha lipoic acid, which is a sulfur-containing molecule which helps you detox very well. So I don't know the mechanism. Right. And now I've seen nicotine gum.
Well, both of those work differently, but the effect can be similar. Alpha lipoic acid can be very powerful for the nerves and the nerve endings, making them more sensitive. And so I use alpha lipoic acid IV for people with numbness in their feet and in their extremities. And literally, their sensation can come back with alpha lipoic acid. Usually it's not one IV, but it's multiple IVs, but they feel something after the first one. And then the nicotine. I had this very interesting multiple cases of people. This was when chronic fatigue was very, very big. And I would have these people that would come in that were health food fanatics and very healthy in terms of their lifestyle. And yet they were suffering from this severe, unrelenting fatigue from chronic fatigue with pain. But the strangest thing was that they would smoke. They would regularly smoke. And I looked at one person and I said, "Why are you smoking? What is happening here?" And she said to me, "If I smoke a cigarette for 15 to 20 minutes, my mind is clear. After that, the rest of the day, it isn't. So I smoke a little bit all throughout the day to be able to focus and think." And what the nicotine is doing, again, working on the neurons and stimulating the neurons. And that's what we see in the NAD, the nicotine. It works on the pathway of the NAD and NADH, which is the B3 and the activated B3. So, there you have it. Go on.
There's some noise coming from your microphone just now.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Should I turn it on?
No, carry on. It's gone now.
It's perfectly where I am. Nobody's there. I'm all alone, quiet.
Yeah, there's another interesting thing that emerged this year, and it was uric acid. And Dr. Perlmutter wrote a book called Drop Acid. But the original research was done by somebody named Richard Johnson, who also wrote a book. And it was that fructose, the sweetener that you find everywhere, high fructose corn syrup and processed foods all over the place, can raise uric acid. Uric acid is also thought to be the cause of gout, the very painful deposits of uric acid crystals, they believe, in your feet or big toe is really common area. And what's all tied into this as well is what we were talking about is this is also happening in people with insulin resistance. So for gout, people were thinking that You should avoid things like meat.
Very much so.
For a gouty attack, and particularly organ meat. And it may not be that at all. High fructose corn syrup may be a good player in this. So it's another little piece of the puzzle that we're learning more and more about how our foods and our environment affect the health of our body. And so if you're out there and you're having a soda, and most of them are high fructose corn syrup, although I believe some countries, like, if I'm not mistaken, Japan won't allow it, and the Mexican original Coke won't allow it. They have cane sugar in it. You're going to have fructose, which is very hard for your body, much harder for your body to deal with and use. And I believe we also talked on this show about the tendency of fructose to cause fatty livers. That means your liver is storing fat, and because of that, your liver is no longer as efficient as a detox, the primary detox organ that we have. So there's slowed detoxification while this. So fructose emerges as a real serious health problem.
I also treat uric acid with bitter cherry juice, and you can get that in most good health food stores in a little bottle. And guess what? It is bitter. So you'll want to take small amounts of it throughout the day. And I've had people just feel better after one day. Also, two other things, folic acid, but I take the methyl tetrahydrofolate, which is the activated form. So you're sure the folate is getting into your cells and into you. And also B5. And those three together, and eliminating high fructose corn syrup, can be a slam dunk for treating gout. It really can be. So I'm going to jump back to mine, Carol.
All right.
At the end, I'm going to say 10 foods that help you lose belly fat. And you're going to be surprised at which ones I say, because some of these you're going to think, oh, gee, those are fattening. One is eggs with the yellow. With the yellow. Now, a lot of people react to eggs because they've been so vaccinated. And one of the adjuvants in the vaccine is albumin. So there's a crossover. So their body is reacting to the albumin that was in the vaccine, but it's in the eggs because the white of the egg is albumin. So if you do well with eggs, make sure you eat the yellow. If you have reaction to eggs, try just the yellow. It's very good for you, very high in choline, which helps kind of thin the bile and thin the fat in the liver and helps the liver function better. So number one would be eggs. Number two is salmon. And they now have the wild-caught salmon. But as I understand, because I was speaking to someone who works in a farm, a fish farm industry, is that the fish farming has become very good now with understanding of nutrients and feeding them better foods and whatever. So I'm not quite as afraid of the farm, the farmed fish as I was. I don't do tilapia, but I do sometimes do salmon that is farmed, but I try to get the wild caught. And you can get the wild caught, you can get it in Costco, it already made up in hamburgers or in slabs. You can get cans of it in Trader Joe's wild caught salmon cans, and then make it up just like tuna fish salad, only it's a salmon salad. Then the next one is cod liver oil. Well, how can a fat help me lose body weight? Well, fats can be emulsifiers. They can be thinners. And they can make you feel very satisfied, so you don't need to eat as much. And vitamin D and vitamin A are also very good for the liver and bile. And so it helps thin the fats. Then cruciferous vegetables, that's broccoli, cabbage. Arugula, I'm sorry?
Cabbage. I was just cooking cabbage today in a wonderful hunter's stew. He goes, a Polish dish.
Sounds delicious. Then the next one is hamburger. Well, how could hamburger be good? Well, it's got a, if it's from a small butcher shop, not just a hamburger anywhere from any grocery store that's a little bit of meat from 100 cows. If you go to a small butcher shop, they grind their hamburger every day. And you can find them in Manhattan. We have one here where I am also. And you can get some wonderful hamburger. And you don't want the low-fat one. You want a nice fatty hamburger, which can be very good for you. You feel satisfied when you're through eating it. Also, avocado, excellent source of fat, but also fiber, and the highest source of potassium, one of the highest sources of potassium that we know, and then broccoli sprouts. What you think is good in broccoli, multiply it by 500, and that's what you find in broccoli sprouts. Very good for you. Asparagus. Asparagus also helps the liver. It's high in lipoic acid. It helps the gallbladder. It helps the kidneys. It's absolutely a wonderful food. And the last one is nutritional yeast. And you want to get one that just has yeast. They have all yeast with added supplements. No, you don't want any added supplements in it. Lots of those supplements that they add are petroleum based. You want just plain. I like Lewis Labs yeast, and but don't get one that has added vitamins. So these are good foods to help you feel satisfied and help you lose some of your weight in your belly, particularly belly fat, because you're losing while you're eating fats and it helps the body direct to your own fat. So, Carol, we've got, guess
one
what?
1 minute.
Oh, if we've even got 1 minute, I want to wish the audience a very happy holiday. I hope you really enjoy this weekend. I hope you're with people you love or appreciate. And I wish you only the best. And thank you so much for being with us and listening to us and sharing this time with us. Okay?
Yes, thank you, everybody. And we so appreciate the opportunity to give you the tools so that you can take charge of your health.
And please do, the number to call to donate to BAI, right now is the time of giving and the time of appreciating. And WBAI is a jewel that we have, very unique in the New York area, but unique all over the country in that we're 100% listener sponsored. That means you and me, we depend on us to support BAI. And the number to call is 212-209-2950. Please call. Please donate. Become a buddy. You already are. In my mind, you're my buddy. And become a buddy. At $10 a month, you'll get a tote bag. And it would be a wonderful way to start the new year. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Goodbye.